everybody. Welcome to Red Eyes Radio. Great to have you here. Thank you for stopping by today. I'm Henrik Palmgren from the land of the Goths in the southwest of Sweden. I hope you're well and that you had a good weekend as well. You can hear us three times a week as we cover all the topics we find to be among the most interesting and important analysis and commentary on the state of the world and the madness we witness all around us as we highlight the double standards, the contradictions, and of course re-examine history, conspiracy, and much more. You can get more at redicecretions.com and redicemembers.com. Today we are talking with Ramsey Paul, a.k.a. Paul Ramsey, about his work and his iconoclastic video productions that mock cultural Marxism and mass immigration into the West. We are also going to discuss the growing anti-Western and anti-European sentiments around the world, and what non-aggressive nationalism is, and how this could help us to counter some of the absurd madness we are seeing as a side effect of the stupid and naive policies of our political elite and mass media. Stick around. Hello, Paul Ramsey. It's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to talk to you. How are you today?
Hey, I'm well. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited about being on this program.
Excellent. So are we about having you here. I've been enjoying many of your videos. I mean, first of all, thank you for making them and for continuing to point out the absurdity of the pathological cultural genocide that we are seeing in the West right now, driven by the elite rulers. You do a great job at showing the absurdity, so please keep it up. How long have you been doing videos now, Paul?
Oh, I've been doing it since 2008. I can't believe it's been that long. I've done hundreds. So, you know, a lot of people, they have like a more respectable addiction, like drinking or porn or something, but I make videos.
That's funny. Now, I want to try to explain a bit for people what is going on in the West right now and what a dangerous path we're on and what an absurd path we're on. But I mean, we've been speaking about the epic failures of mass immigration and multiculturalism into Sweden specifically, but also Europe for a few years now. We've even had many other leaders in Europe actually sharing those sentiments, like Merkel and Sarkozy and Cameron, etc. And yet there are some who just don't kind of see that this is an agenda-driven issue, that it's something that actually is forced upon us without any kind of democratic decision-making being part of the process. Most people can see it these days, you know, banking conspiracies with the bailouts and the agenda behind the industrial military complex, etc. But on some of these political issues, there is a failure to connect the dots, I feel anyway. Why do you think there is such a disconnect on some of these issues, do you think?
Well, I think the point is they want to try to get a whole blended humanity, and they don't want ethnic groups to keep their identity. And I'm a nationalist, which means more than race. It means also language, culture, and I travel quite a bit. And one of the things I love about Eastern Europe is they still have a lot of their heritage. Like, I spent some time in Hungary, and they have their Hungarian language, and the people are Hungarians. And that's what a nation is, and that cohesiveness really helps to make a society prosperous and happy. And it doesn't mean you dislike other people. I like all peoples, and I think all people should have the right of self-determination. So countries are good. They keep people happy. And I like to visit other countries. I like Japanese, but you know, I want to try to force my values on the Japanese. And it's sad where we're losing in Europe and in North America a lot of our heritage. And so I think the goal is of the elite and their big corporation is just to make this huge mass of like robots that's indistinguishable. We're not loyal to any country or nation. We're just all interchangeable clogs. So I think that's really what's driving a lot of it.
I would agree. Why do you think that heritage is important in that picture? Why does it help to stand in the way of the agenda that we're seeing driven right now?
Well, because you realize that more is important than just finance. And it's kind of, I use the analogy of like you throw a pebble into a lake, or if you've done that, a pond, you see the rings go out. And the first ring is kind of like you, the individual. Then you have your family, and then you have your extended family, and then you go on, and you have your nation. And that's natural. That's normal. And you tend to be closer to the people with inside the rings. And so if you have people that share a common values, you realize that there's things more important than just making an extra 20 cents or something, or save someone profit. And we see this a lot with like a lot of big businesses, at least in the United States. They outsource a lot of their production. And while it helps to cut cost, it really devastates communities we see in the United States. So it hurts the people, but it helps the corporations. And I think that's just when you have a nationalist policy, you can prevent that sort of thing.
Well, definitely. I guess I'd like to go back a little bit in history as well and see some of the things that have happened in this regard in terms of the destruction of the family. And I mean, again, just to make a reference to Sweden, because that's where I've spent the majority of my life, the Marxism, if you will, that we've seen there has also acted to sever these bonds. Obviously, if we go back to the, you know, 60s and 70s, it was a very much, you know, culturally and racially homogenous in that regard. But at the same time, then I feel that the kind of socialism we had was obviously, you know, good to that extent, because it actually worked for the people that were there. There was a common interest and a common heritage in that regard. And today is quite the opposite. This is giving way, of course, to the multicultural myth and all this stuff. And then we're seeing how these bonds that you mentioned are basically being severed. But to me, it feels like the socialism that we had in Sweden was kind of part of helping to sever or give way to the scenario that we've seen, that we see today in Sweden. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's a shame what happened in Sweden, at least from an American. I've never been to Sweden, but you always picture like blonde girls or something, you know? And then I guess you've really changed demographically with immigration. So I think it's really accelerated, because even I'm older, but even in the 70s, you always thought of Sweden being composed of Swedish people and England composed of English people, Germans, you know, that just seems natural. But now we see this effort to try to mix everyone together, and you have this equation, diversity plus, you know, proximity always equals conflict. And so it's just not a good situation. So,
well, exactly. I think we linked up an article about that yesterday. It was out of the Examiner. Someone actually looked at the numbers, which was quite interesting, because it was a huge contradiction there in terms of what America's most peaceful versus least peaceful states were. And they broke it down. That actually showed that there was this myth that with the so-called diversity, you get a lot of, you know, conflicts and stuff like that. I can't help, though, to think that this is also part of the agenda, right? I mean, to actually create a kind of a cultural conflict on the streets, a kind of a civil war. I mean, we've kind of seen allusions to this already. If we look at the riots that have been going on in France and in England and in Sweden, too, last summer, and then I think you've had similar things over in America as well. Is that part of the picture, do you think, here, to create this kind of street-level conflict that we're seeing?
Yeah, I think it's some of that. Part of it, from a political point of view, in the United States, we have, in our system, it's not parliamentary, we have basically just two parties, the Democrats and Republicans. And typically, immigrants, if they're like Hispanic or so forth, they tend to be more Democrat. So there's been a push, you know, whenever you bring in a lot more, in my area where we live, is the big problem is the Mexican immigration. And, you know, there's some good people, but the problem is a lot of those people, they tend to vote Democratic. So a lot of the elite, at least on the Democrat side, are pushing this immigration because they know that will keep them in power, at least temporarily. And pretty soon, the Democratic Party in the United States will kind of be like the PRI party in Mexico. That's the Revolutionary Party, was in power for, I don't know, like 100 years. We're basically going to end up like a one-party state, where the Democrats going to be always in control of the presidency based on how our electoral votes work. So I think a lot of it was just to get a lot of the votes for the Democrats. And, you know, it's a good short-term strategy, but it destroys your cohesiveness of the country, because there's a difference between a country and a nation. A nation comes from the Latin word meaning birth, you know, like neonatal, that comes from the word nation. And it means you have something related to someone. A country is just a geographic place. And it's become, America was always a place, is majority kind of English-speaking white country. It didn't mean everyone has to be white or English-speaking, but everyone came here kind of assimilated into that culture. I have immigrants on my mother's side that were from Germany, and, you know, they didn't want to keep speaking German forever. They picked up English, and they became part of America. We're not seeing that anymore, especially in the Southwest. We're seeing a lot of the culture really becoming really just Mexico. So it's a profound change than what we saw previously with other types of immigration into this country.
Well, exactly. Assimilation, it's a dirty word now. You're expected to keep everything you have. And so at the end of the day, then, that so-called diversity is basically just, well, we've seen this in other contexts as well, but it's basically just as long as it's not what it has to be in the country, then it's diversity, right?
Right. Yeah, here in the United States, they kind of use the word diversity to mean non-white is really kind of the code word. For example, if they say, okay, you know, a company needs more diversity, or we need more diversity in coaching, they always just mean they need less white people is what they mean. We have basketball here, and it's probably 90% black, but you never hear them say, oh, we need diversity in basketball. No, it's already diverse, meaning there's not hardly any white people. That's really what they mean by diversity.
But I thought race didn't exist. That's what we've been taught now in school. So how do we solve that contradiction, right?
Yeah, the culture Marxists, they always have a funny thing is that these two contradictory positions they hold. One is that there's no such thing as race. It's a social construct. But then, you know, with affirmative action, all of a sudden they can determine what race is. And they can say, oh, you know, it's the evil white man that did all this. I'm like, well, how could he do that when we don't exist? And so it's not a cohesive, it's not an intellectually consistent, you know, they don't care about politics. You don't have to be intellectually consistent.
Well, exactly. It's, what was it they said? Some things are just so... so stupid that an intellectual could believe it, in relation to useful idiots that Lenin coined, I think. But tell us a little bit more about, I think you used the term non-aggressive nationalism, because there is a huge misconception here that basically thinks that, kind of you alluded to this before, that if you're pro your nation, and again, it doesn't mean the geographical area of the country per se, but if you're pro, nationalist, you basically want to kill people, you want to exterminate them, you want to, you know, do anything you can to be as violent as possible, right? So maybe we can deconstruct that a little bit and tell us a little bit more about the I guess, your philosophy, basically.
Yeah, sure. I'm a nationalist for all people. That's why I don't call myself a white nationalist, and there's some other reasons I don't call myself that. Because I believe it goes beyond race, because nationalism's a race is a component, but it's also language, it's culture, it's a common bond. And so it can transcend race. I'm not a 100% racial purist or anything like that. But nationalism is just the belief that people have a right to live, and they have a right to what we call self-determination, meaning determining their own way of doing things. It doesn't mean that way is superior than other people's. It's just that they want to do their own way. And it's natural. We see that everywhere. In the United States, it just happens naturally. Anyway, people tend to break off into their ethnic groups. You see that in schools, right? Or where the Hispanic kids will all sit together at the lunch table, the black kids and the white kids. It's just a natural thing. And as nationalism, it really solves a lot of the issues of conflict, because people have their own countries, so they don't have to worry about, like, you know, we don't have enough black judges or something. Well, if you have your own country, they can all be black, so you don't have to worry about the issue there. So that's the advantage of nationalism. And I'm a nationalist for all people, no matter what race or what area. You know, I'm a German nationalist, I'm a Hungarian nationalist, I'm a, you know, Mexican nationalist. All people have a right to have their identity.
Well, indeed, exactly. So they are trying to, what I'm kind of seeing here is this full circle kind of thing that they're trying to solve. They're trying to attain a position now where basically where we had it from the beginning. You pointed out this many times, and I find it really hilarious, actually, that it seems to be a problem if there's too many white people in one area. For example, as we saw a recent news story coming out in regards to Portland in Oregon, that there was too many white people in the city. So this is a problem. So now they need to try to fix that situation, right? But eventually, you know, it's kind of like what you said, you go full circle and you realize, okay, well, if there's a problem because there's so many white people in some of these areas, nationalism would be a solution to that, because then you would not have to have all those issues of people in, you know, you would have them separate in their own area where they wanted to be as it was in the beginning, right?
Yeah, exactly. And in my ideal world, I think smallness is good. I don't like big countries. I think smaller countries tend to get in less trouble, less mischief, like we do if we became smaller and broke apart into smaller states. And so people can have their own identity, and they can kind of live where they choose, where they're happy, and it fits their values. So again, I think one of the absurd things is we're trying to get a one-size-fits-all in the United States, and we're different. We're not the same. We have different beliefs and different values. So naturally you're going to have conflict. So the way to get rid of that conflict is to have self-determination, have own countries. That's the whole idea of nationalism. That's why, you know, originally you don't have the Germans have to live with the French. They're, you know, even though they're both white, they have different values, they have different language. Historically, they had different religions, so it made sense for them to be in separate countries. It didn't mean they have to hate each other, although in that case they kind of do, but, you know, it's nothing about hate. It's actually respecting other people when you allow them to have self-determination of their own country.
Well, exactly. That's a point I want to return to a little bit later, talk a little bit more about that in detail, but let's just run through some of the points of arguments that I've usually heard when it comes to some of these things. One, for example, is if we look at the scenario of the West, right? The West is guilty for all the evils in the world. Okay, we know that. That's great. And of course, they're bombing the rest of the world. Ergo, you kind of deserve what you're getting in terms of the cultural destruction that comes out of mass immigration, etc. Of course, there are so many points in that we could talk more about in terms of course, who runs the foreign policy in the Western world, who is actually, you know, behind NATO. Do NATO and America and AIPAC and all these organizations, do they serve the interest of the people? It's almost like we've ended up in a scenario now where two wrongs, it's somehow meant to make a right, so people can be, for example, inherently against colonization initially, but then now it's a kind of a colonization of the West of sorts, but now there seem to be kind of, they're almost for it because you deserve that treatment, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting if they say, well, you deserve it as kind of a punishment, but and again, you know, they have these two different points of views and like, oh, okay, well, that's sounding like it, you're saying it's something bad. I thought you guys always said this immigration is wonderful. It's going to enrich you. It's going to, you'll have all these fabulous foods and flavors and blah, blah, blah. And now you're saying, well, you deserve to get this. It's like a punishment. You kind of got to make up your mind, which is it? And I am sympathetic with, because I believe if I was like seeing, I don't know, did you ever watch Star Trek, and they had something called
sure.
the Prime Directive? I don't know if you know what that was.
Yeah,
but that was a thing in Star Trek where if people don't know what Star Trek is, it's a space thing where, you know, they went around and they met other cultures. But one of their greatest laws was you can't mess with some other culture. You can't interfere. You just need to allow the people to be. And I believe if I was like King, I would have the Prime Directive. And if we ran into some other country, we just need to allow those countries to work out their own problems. It doesn't mean we have to agree with how they live their lives or how they run their countries. You know, that's their problem. That's for them to deal with. It's not our business to try to police the world or be the moral nanny of the world. We just need to take care of our own. So that would. So I am sympathetic with that. That I'm not big on all these globalist wars that we seem to be typically involved with forever.
Sure, exactly. Well, that's a huge issue. I mean, that's our demon to wrestle with. Obviously, the issue of who actually runs, you know, the West, who runs American foreign policy, who dictates where NATO is to go in, and all these things. And how do you view that? How do you deconstruct that for people who don't kind of get that point and think that for example, American foreign policy is something that all Americans, you know, on the street level agree with. They're proud over their military and what they're doing around the world.
Well, yeah, you know, hey, I'm just from the South. I'm just a Southern guy. But I think I saw a poll, only like 29% of Americans are for intervention into Syria. But then I thought, well, wait a minute, there's probably only 29% of Americans have ever heard of Syria. So I don't know what that says. So, I'm getting the sense of just normal people that normal Americans are getting tired of all these wars. I think initially we kind of got whooped up into the war fever because of 9/11. And in our minds, somehow, yeah, Saddam Hussein didn't really do it, but he's kind of an Arab, and it kind of all mixed together for us. So, you know, we're mad, we got to bomb someone, so he's a good one to bomb. So we kind of went in there in Afghanistan. I think we're still in Afghanistan. I lose track of all these wars. So, and I know we're trying to agitate another war in Syria. I don't know, Iran, is that on the table? Is that the next war? I lose track of these wars. But the typical people that I run into, we don't really want the war, especially where I'm in the South. This is the Southern boys here. I feel bad for them. They're the young kids that end up going over there and getting their arms blown off and dying. It's not the elite that go to Harvard and Yale, right? They're children. They don't go over in the deserts and fight and bleed. It's kind of more of the poor white kids down here that do that. So it's not in our interest.
Well, exactly. It's a really good point. And you did a couple of good videos about, you know, Syria and Assad and, you know, the absurdity in terms of the accusations of what they're doing, or the justifications, rather, of why, you know, America and the rest of the NATO countries need to invade immediately into that. And it's obvious that the Amish are pulling the strings, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Amish are always stirring up trouble. Yeah, I just don't really care about the Middle East. Most people here, I don't really think do. I think that's really a healthy attitude, to be honest. We don't need to get involved. For some reason, we're always involved with the Middle East, so we're not involved with like Burma or something. But yeah.
How do you think we are to tackle that issue in the West, of trying to get our leaders to stop in this behavior? Ultimately, one which on one level then at least is, you know, is half of the equation of the problems that we talked about in terms of, you know, when there is war and strife in other countries, an effect of that is that you get a lot of people who want to leave those countries. But this, see, from my view, I see this whole thing as a conspiracy of all. It's not only to bomb the countries and put a, you know, central bank in Iraq and, you know, give them the blissful democracy of, you know, everything that we have to offer in terms of the BS of the West, but at the same time, we're getting the other half of that equation is that you get mass immigration into many of the Western countries. I mean, I've never understood the equation. For example, there can be Swedish military, albeit very small. I think it's about 300 men in total that's been involved in Afghanistan in that war, you know, but we're part of the war. But then at the same time, we're accepting immigrants from that country, you know, coming into Sweden. Isn't that an absurd, you know, concept?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the original purpose, in my opinion, of the military is to keep people out of your country, to defend the borders.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's the proper use of the military. So I'm not a pacifist. So, if Syria should launch their tanks across their border somehow, yeah, we could fight them. But I don't think they're really quite a threat. But the propaganda is kind of silly, and they get their talking points. And as I just showed in my one video, they all start saying the same phrase over and over, and that's scripted because they want to try to agitate for a war for various reasons. So, but yeah, I'm mostly in that. I'm pretty much anti-war in most cases. So I know I'm on the right, and when I was a kid, it was always like, oh, the people on the right are the warmongers, and the people on the left are about, you know, peace and love. And now it's all these socialists and stuff. They're always like, we got to get another war. And the people on the right are like, no more wars. It's really changed. So,
exactly. Well, that's really – I was amazed by that when the Libyan conflicts bloomed up as well. I saw politicians from around the world, all of Europe, and specifically I was amazed to see all the socialists, you know, and democratic socialists and everything – basically putting themselves behind this message and be like, we have to go into Libya, we have to liberate the people. And then you realize after a while that, wait a minute, the you know, the so-called allies here in this regard are like, they're funding the terrorists in these countries, actually causing more problem. They're working with the people who were supposed initially in a way to be against, right? Looking even how things have turned out in Egypt with the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood and everything. It's like, wait a minute, what is going on here? What side are we How is this going to benefit us at the end of the day? That's what I'm getting to. I think if there wasn't such a thing as, you know, real problematic terrorism in the world to begin with, now they've certainly created it, you know?
Yeah, and here's a dirty little secret in the United States. Maybe I shouldn't tell you this, but there's a lot of money in making war and defense contracts and everything. And that's a lot of the reasoning behind it, too. It keeps those defense contracts flowing, and Dow Chemical and, you know, Martin Marietta and all those. There's a lot of money that's involved with that. So there's a lot of people that benefit from this type of stuff financially. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. So let's switch over here a little bit and talk a little bit about the new era that we find ourselves in right now, where basically if you are, you know, white, you're supposed to feel guilty for the sins of your fathers and everything that was happening in previous generations and whatnot. And, of course, we've tried to detail as well in the program here a couple of times now and in articles, et cetera, that the behavior of colonization, wars over resources, fighting, you know, over territory with either if it's tribes or countries or what have you, has been basically a constant throughout the entire human existence. As far back as we can know and remember, there's been conflict. And then we reach a point here somewhere in, the 1800s, 1900s, maybe. There's still wars, of course, but we have this different moral view on it now. But just because we happen to find ourselves in a scenario where we where people have a myopic view on it, and the most recent issues are often the most remembered, right? So now we are to carry the load to a certain extent for things that occurred, you know, several hundred, if not even thousands of years ago in some cases. How do you view the absurdity on this and the fact that we are supposed to feel guilty for our skin color these days?
Well, the first thing that's absurd is that we, many cases, claim that we don't even exist, right? Because,
right.
I don't know, Sweden, but a lot of times they, oh, no, no, there's no such thing as white people. What do you mean you're white? I don't know what you're talking about. There's no such thing as white. And it's like, okay, then we can't be blamed for everything, because if we don't exist, how can we be blamed for everything? So, yeah, they're not very consistent in their thinking. I love history, and all peoples have fought forever. Even our Native Americans, it could have probably been white people originally over here. Some of the archaeological evidence, and they were probably wiped out. But you know, that whole concept is even with the Indians here. And I'm in Oklahoma. There's a lot of Indian people. I like them, but they don't have the concept. And by the way, they call themselves Indians, not Native Americans.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a PC term they don't use. But they're tribes. They're different tribes. And when the white man came here, it wasn't like all the Indians were united together. They saw themselves as Cherokee or Creek or whatever. They didn't see themselves as just some united people. In fact, in our French and Indian War, some fought for the French, some fought for the English. So it's more complicated than that. And it's just like that throughout humanity. Obviously, with Europe, I mean, wars between white people, and Africa wasn't some kumbaya love fest there. There was genocide that happened in Africa between various tribes. This is worldwide. And it's just sort of the human nature of how things are. And that's why it's so important to have a nation that you can protect so you can continue your offspring and you can have a happy place to live. So it's not unique to white people. It's the human condition.
Well, exactly. I mean, the slave trade in itself, you know, Berber slavery, the Arab participation, the Jewish participation in the whole thing. I mean, if we look at it from that point of view again, that the West is somehow punished for it, that they were the only ones responsible for slavery, right? So people can, for example, look at the Ottoman Empire and realize that, wait a minute, that was one of the most brutal, you know, slave-driven empires the world has ever seen. Yet they are not asked to perform the cultural, you know, genocide and giving up of their heritage because of their past behavior. So there is a different standard held against the West as opposed to other countries and other nations and other races and people, right?
Yeah, ironically, I think the West is the only people to abolish slavery. And it wasn't like during slavery, a bunch of white people with butterfly nets and captured Africans and took them back. They bought them from other Africans. Africans would capture other tribes and make them slaves, and they would sell them to Arabs or other white people. And that's how it worked. So all people were involved with it. So slavery, I mean, it's a horrible thing. It's something we should definitely eliminate, but it was really the white people or the West that eliminated slavery and did the push. I think there's still slavery that goes on in Africa some. So it's not totally eradicated. It should be, but again, that was a historical thing that went on forever. And it wasn't just Africans. White people were slaves throughout history and so forth. It was very, very common.
Well, exactly. I mean, even the word slave comes from the Slavs, Slavic people, you know, and Michael Hoffman II has written about this. We're going to try to get him on to talk about Irish slavery and basically how so many people from England and the UK, I guess it wasn't the UK then, but England, Scotland, and Ireland were, you know, forced over to the American colonies and everything. It wasn't that one-sided. I think even the first slave owner in the Americas actually was black. I forget his name now, but there are these interesting inconsistencies like that when you actually begin to examine it in greater detail, you know, like the Indians were fighting with some Indian tribes were fighting with the Confederacy, for example, you know, like weird things like that. There's like, wait a minute, what did this mean? We're fed this absurdly one-sided and simplified version of history because it fits the narrative of what we need to be indoctrinated with so that we will give way to the wishes of the political elite. That's how I see it anyway.
Sometimes it's hilarious consequences. Down here in Oklahoma, you know, we have a lot of Indians, and then you have African Americans, and it's like, okay, well, who trumps who? Because it turned out that a lot of the Indians, they owned African slaves. So yeah. It's like, you know, who's the bad guy here? Because Indians are supposed to be in tune with nature and all that. Here they owned African slaves. So it became a big issue because some, the Cherokee Nation here, some Africans, they kicked the Africans out of their tribe. And they said, you're not really part of our tribe. You're just slaves. And they wanted to still be part of the tribe. Because if you're an Indian here in Oklahoma, you get all tons of benefits. You get to go to school free and everything. And that's another whole subject, but so it's interesting when these politically correct privileged groups have this run-in, who trumps who. It's quite entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. It's just very interesting. And I think that, again, the simplification of history is very, very dangerous. And it just that narrative, I want to try to talk a little bit more about that and what actually is going on right now with, you know, with political correctness and multiculturalism, mass immigration, all these issues are, if you combine them, you realize that there is a bigger plan and a bigger agenda here at play, you know, and it seems very difficult for some people to see through that or mm-hmm. piece this puzzle together to realize what actually is going on, and it's meant, to be disruptive. It's meant to cause, you know, chaos, kind of as I alluded to before. There's other examples of this, of course, the way that we see this. I wanted to get your take on the recent, I think it was Progressive Today, released a couple of good videos about the White Privilege Conference. Did you ever get a chance to see those videos?
Oh, no, I did some videos on the White Privilege Conference quite a bit. And, that's a whole weird concept that has taken hold of America. As near as I can figure it, it's a bunch of white liberals that hate white people, and they just get together and they just go crazy. It's like a cult, really, is how they talk and the words, and it's actually creepy, but that's like the new thing that's out there, yeah, the white privilege.
Well, exactly, and the conference, I think the concept there was started by a Peggy McIntosh, I believe it was, as well, a prominent feminist as well. That actually plays into this quite a bit as well. You've done some good videos on that subject alone, and we, of course, in Sweden have been suffering under state feminism for many, many years now, if not even going on, I think it's 4 or 5 decades or something like that. And
you're ground zero.
Oh my God.
And I'm not against feminism because I know all girls can't be pretty, but you know, I'm against most of them, so. I'd probably get arrested for that joke in Sweden.
You would, exactly. Yeah, come January here, actually, I potentially might be prosecuted for some of my, if someone finds something offensive that I might say, I might be prosecuted for that. And we did actually an interview with a street artist from Sweden called Don Park, and he did some quote-unquote offensive art in that regard. He did it as a kind of to show the absurdity, of course, but he was forcefully hauled off by police in Sweden, who was arrested, prosecuted. They tried to actually get him to, they tried to get him forcefully committed to a mental institution as well, because he doesn't see the boon of mass immigration. It's turning really absurd in Sweden right now. It's actually turning into a quite the tyranny, like I haven't seen in any other country. So we'll see how this goes, and we'll see if I can manage to still do this come January, February here.
Well, you know, the Soviets used to do that, put people in mental institutions with you, so, yeah.
Exactly. It's unbelievable, really. Now, so let's get back to you a little bit on talking about some of the other points here as well. Maybe you can explain to us, where does this guilt come from, do you think, when it comes to associations and you know, cultural backgrounds, heritage, race, etc.? What is driving that, and how come people are actually falling for these lies and not seeing through the absurdity of this? How did they have pulled this off?
The short answer is, I think it's kind of a long topic. I actually gave a speech on this at American Renaissance, but the short answer is religion. We have a Protestant ethic here in the United States. We came from the Puritans. And these people, they've abandoned God, but they still have this. Because I was raised a Christian, and I still am a Christian, so I understand the terminology. And even though they don't believe in God, they still believe in the concept of original sin. If you've heard of that,
yeah.
They believe that the original sin, though, is not because of God or sin. It's because of being white. It's our original sin. And we need to somehow, in order to have redemption and penance. And so it's like years ago, they would flog themselves or wear, you know, hair pieces and all that. You have that same type of religious determinism that they feel they have to atone for their wickedness, and it's extremely religious in nature, even though they a lot of times don't believe in God and they would deny it, but they have that whole religious feel about it. So I think a lot of it is kind of, if you take away the church and God, there was a void, and they still have those that need, and so they replaced it with what I call cultural Marxism, and so I think that was the gist of it. Now, to be fair, though, you got to understand, these guys are freaks, right? I mean, the majority of the people I hang around with, drink beer with down here, they don't think like that. We're not ashamed of being white or being a man. I mean, every guy I'm around is like, yeah, I'm a guy. Yeah, I'm not going to apologize I have a penis or something. But in the universities, you have these really freaky types that, make this their whole thing. So I think they're really a small percentage. And I've noticed that on YouTube videos, or even on comments on news sites, is when they ever have something weird like that, they have to shut the comments down because everyone is against them. So I don't really think their position is really that popular. It's just that, from what you said earlier, what happens in Sweden, the people in control, kind of like the Soviets did, they kind of got this reign of terror over people to try to be silent, not speak up. But if people can speak up anonymously like they can on the internet, you see a whole different point of view, or just in real life. I don't know anyone in real life that buys this white guilt thing. Maybe it's just me, but I don't think it's really that popular with real people.
Yeah, it's a good point. They've managed to try to give this illusion that this is what's going on. And that's what happens, I guess, when you have basically full media control. I mean, the States is a little bit different, I would say. We have a lot of state-funded, government-subsidized media in Sweden and in many other countries as well, which turns it into this incredibly one-sided apparatus, which basically, obviously, would not bite the hand that feeds it, right? So they just sing from the government song sheet all the time, basically. But despite that, we have more and more websites coming out, more and more people beginning to be able to speak up about it, But a lot of it has to do with that illusion that they are all powerful because they control the discussion in the media, right? So that's another important issue that we need to kind of attack and break down, that media monopoly that we've seen for a long time.
Right, and that's how come, that's what I do, right? I'm on YouTube, and I would have never got a platform if it wasn't for YouTube. I'm just a regular guy. And what I do is I make fun of them, and that's what they hate worse than anything, is to be mocked and ridiculed. And it's also harder for them to censor you when you're making fun of them because, you satire and so forth. They expect you to be angry and mad and, the cliche. So you should never buy into their frame. You should always have fun or do it in a different way, and they have troubles with that. So, and we're in the United States, we're the same way. I think it's Sweden, even though we have a lot of private corporations. In reality, our corporations are beholden to the government. If you know what side your bread is buttered on, right, you better kind of toe the line. Otherwise, you may have some nasty audits and so forth. So we're not really a free press either.
Yeah, exactly. Now, this is a very important point to bring up in terms of humor as well. There's of course, issues here that then you're not allowed to talk about, right? You have to. It's the issues are charged with an aura of awfulness, evilness around them, a wicked kind of and so when you make fun of it, you kind of deconstruct that bubble that they've managed to build up around it, which of course is hilarious to watch some of your videos, the absurdity of some of these things and the way that you manage to kind of just pierce through those things. So it's a very important issue, I think, as well, to deflate the immense seriousness that has been built up around this. And a lot of people are in that regard kind of, unfortunately in that regard, kind of playing into that as well. I mean, for example, the way you ended up on, was it the SPLC, the magazine or something like that?
Yes.
with the photo, absurdity,
Yeah, I ended up as one of the three most dangerous propagandists in America or something like that.
That's quite the honor.
Yeah, that's an honor. Yeah. I felt good about it. It was just funny because I just make silly videos is all I do. So they don't really know they know that I'm dangerous because I'm kind of funny and I don't take them that seriously. I'm not a violent person or anything like that. But yeah, it's funny how they, to do that. So. Yeah, that's what I do. It's fun.
Exactly. The SPLC, they have, have they discredited themselves over and over and over again? It's kind of like the ADL, that recent report they released, that what was it, 1 26% or something like that, they said, of all the world is anti-Semitic, right?
Yeah, 1 billion people are anti-Semitic.
Oh, my God. Jeez.
And yeah, it's, they've kind of jumped the shark, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Now, there was a couple of good comments I saw about that, too, that it was like who else would do those kinds of surveys of how much else the world, you know, hates or likes somebody like that? Like, imagine if Sweden did that. We're going to do a survey to see how much, you know, how many people hate the Swedes out there, and then we're going to start up an organization to try to pierce through the lie that we own all the media in the world, you know?
Yeah, it is interesting, the double standard there, so.
Now, let's get back to the other point you mentioned of religion. I think that's a really important one as well. The way that you need to believe in something. It kind of seems to be something that's hardwired within human beings, part of human nature. And so when we give up one belief system, we quickly adopt another one. In this case, we're talking about the belief in utopia or the belief in, a socialist paradise or, you know, what have you, basically. Fill in any blank there. And that these people have adopted a view which is not based in any kind of rationality, right? It's something that is religiously driven, which makes it just so much more difficult, as we can see, for example, with fanaticism within Islam or something like that. There's no level of kind of debate that can occur there. You might find yourself in a situation where you want to debate, but the other side will actually want to really get rid of you at the end of the day. And so that's a dangerous dynamic, I guess, in all of this as well. There is a component of seriousness, obviously, to all of this also.
Oh, very much so. And we're talking about the SPLC and the ADL. And they're really kind of, think about it, the modern-day witch hunters. And they're looking for witches. And witches meaning people that don't toe the orthodox political line. And because it's really amazing they would do something on me, because I don't belong to a political organization, and I've done my videos and been, hey guys, think for yourselves. I'm not telling you how to think. You know, I just do videos for fun. And here I'm American. I do give my opinions in a non-hateful way, but I'm a threat because I say I have bad thoughts. And I'm like, how's that American? You know,
yeah.
Who told them that they can determine who can think, what we can think, and what we can say? So they're kind of the modern, you know, the witch hunters of the Puritan era, trying to, you know, get rid of the bad thought. They're kind of like doing the Inquisition. You know, if we witches were that powerful, then they would be the ones being hunted, right? Logically.
But exactly.
That's what I always thought. It's kind of strange. So we've really kind of adopted a lot of that same type of, the Puritan ethic, really. We just replace God with something else. And the thing they believe in, most of their, you know, in Christianity, you have certain beliefs you just have to believe in. It's fundamental, like belief in God or whatever. They believe, their number one belief that they can't argue is heresy, is equality, meaning everyone is the same, which is, if you ever had children, I have two children, it's ridiculous. There's no two people that are the same. There is no equality, but that's their biggest premise, is everything is the same. So if there's different of results, let's say, between black kids and Asian kids or Jewish kids, it must be because of racism. It can't be because, well, maybe people aren't exactly the same. You know, you can't go there. That's heresy. That's hate. What used to be called heresy, they now call hate, but same thing. So,
yeah. Well, it's absolutely absurd. I mean, you just think about the other issue there. I think that the white privilege conference, again, I saw those, a couple of clips from the inside there, the videos that they made, and it was quite astonishing, some of the things that they mentioned. And it was these young kids, I think it was like eighth graders or something like that, was literally being like indoctrinated into these ideas. You could, like, it was like a cult vibe in that. It was horrible. And they even advocated what to wear. White wristbands, I think. White wristbands, if you're white,
yes.
Remind yourself of the guilt that you're supposed to feel. I mean, haven't we seen these ideas in other parts of the world at another time of putting symbols on people?
Yeah, for who they are? Like the Star of David.
Yeah, exactly.
Identify whites. I guess they could look at us. But yeah, it's ridiculous. And they are like a cult. And I've kind of joked about it, but it's close to being like a Jim Jones cult. Because based on their, if you take the premise to the logical conclusion, they should just all just drink the Kool-Aid of cyanide and just die there, suicide. Because why are they alive if by their nature they're so wicked and being white? And that's their whole philosophy, is that white people can't choose to be good. White people are just inherently evil. Well, kill yourself then. I mean, please don't pass on your genetics. We don't need you. So, I mean, if they're alive, they're a hypocrite if they believe that.
I think your latest video was about that too, right? Just slit your wrists. That's what it is.
Yeah, exactly. You put yourself out of your pain and our pain.
Exactly. Yeah, and but it seems to be kind of a crab mentality, right? It's about not letting anyone out of that bucket. We're all meant to, you know, be here and stew together, right? In the guilt soup. And so if someone kind of attains and gets out of that situation, we have to take him down real quick. Otherwise, it might be developed into a dangerous neo-Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews, right?
Exactly. And that's like something I never got. I just don't like have a shred of guilt whatsoever. I mean, I think in general, white people have given a lot of good things to humanity.
I believe so too.
Eradication of disease and food and technology. So, and you know, we had the power literally wipe out every other race we could because we had the higher technology and so forth, and we didn't do that. So I don't think white people are always that evil. I mean, some are, but I think in general we're not such bad people. And you know, I don't hate white people. I'm pro white, I'm pro black, I'm pro Hispanic, pro Japanese. And I don't think just because you're pro something that means you have to hate other people. I'm pro everything. So I don't know.
Exactly.
I guess you can't be that way, but I am.
No, I definitely agree with you. I'm the same way. See, I'm actually for true diversity. I want to see everyone thrive and being alive. It has nothing to do with, you know, ousting anybody in that regard. I mean, that's absurd. That's actually, I mean, they talk so much about creating stereotypes, right? But how about creating that stereotype for white people, that they always the same way? I mean, we've been watching the entertainment media or the entertainment, as I like to call it, and looked at a lot of different, you know, clips and basically how they portray different people in the media and everything like that. It's like the stereotypical white person that they portray is just it's absurd, but that's somehow it's an okay target, right? It's okay to do that. That's again, because we're back to that idea that they somehow deserve to be portrayed that way because they're responsible for all the evils in the world, right?
Right. And my point, if everyone says we're so evil, then I always go back, okay, well, we'll take your premise and then we should probably be away from you in our own country. And so like Swedish, if Swedish people are very evil, then they should keep other people out because otherwise we'd exploit you. So you'd be happy in your own countries. Don't be around us. We'll just, you know, it's just so strange because if we're such wicked people, white people in general, why do all the other people follow us no matter where we go? It doesn't make sense. It seems like they try to get away from us, right, if we're so wicked. But nope, they're always following wherever we're going. So it doesn't add up to me. But hey, again, I'm just a guy from the South. I'm not the smartest guy. So
yeah, we could we're going to take a break here in a little bit and continue in the second segment to talk more here with Paul Ramsey. But yeah, it reminded me of one of the other articles there. I think it was in Portland, Oregon again, that the city was too white, so something has to be done about that, you know. So it's this absurd idea that, like, where are they supposed to go? Where can they be then? You know, so, are they supposed to kill themselves? Is that it? You know.
Yeah, and have you ever heard the mainstream media say a city's too black?
I've never heard that either, actually, or too Asian, or too Indian, or you know, no. So why does it only apply to the Western countries then? All of this, isn't that absurd? I mean, where's the diversity in some of the Indian cities? I mean, I guess they had a little bit more of that, you know, before. But where do we see that anymore in these days? Or some of the Asian countries? I think the Japanese are some of the most culturally and racially homogenous people that there are, and they're actually quite proud of that, and good for them for that too. They should keep it the way that they want to and live the way that they want to do, you know.
Yeah, they should have to wear a yellow wristband to understand their Japanese privilege. Right? Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's just crazy. Just think if, like, what's happening to countries like Sweden or all the West, let's say if a bunch of white people just started to immigrate into Japan, so much so that now the Tokyo was majority non-Japanese. That'd be considered a type of ethnic cleansing. It'd be considered horrible, but that's what's happening. Like, London is not even, I don't even think 50% white anymore. So
that's right.
Native British. So it's just crazy what has happened, how we've allowed that to happen.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It is crazy. It's a crazy idea, and I don't understand how people cannot see that. Again, just a double standard that they used to be against colonization and the way that other countries are conquested, and now the same thing is happening, but now people are for it. Can you not see that contradiction there? You know, it's like, anyway.
Okay.
Let's take a short break here, Paul, and
sure.
I'll pick up in a while, but please tell us where people can go and see your videos. You have a lot of them out there. Of course, you have a website, you have a YouTube channel, Twitter. Please go ahead and give us all the details so people know where to go to see more of your work.
Yeah, I'm Ramsey Paul. That's RamzPaul, Ramsey Paul. And if you just Google that, that's my Google name. I also have a website. You can see my videos. So I put out 3 videos a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday usually. So, and I try to keep them short, about 3 minutes. Because I always thought, you know, 3 minutes is long enough for sex, it's long enough for videos. That's my philosophy. So go check it out.
That's a good one. RamzePaul.com. We'll have that linked up and all the other channels there as well. Okay, stay with us. We'll be right back with more. We proceed with our conversation with Ramsey Paul in the second hour about the absurdity of the policies in the West and some of the more important aspects of what we can do to resolve some of the issues that we see occurring in the world due to the political elite's decisions. And remember, all of this is non-democratic. All of this is occurring above people's heads. So always keep that in mind when we talk about these issues. And of course, as we witness in the European elections this Sunday, it shows that both Britain and France, Denmark, and Sweden, for that matter, too, actually are fed up with the open border policies, and they actually want their countries back. Is this really a big surprise? Well, we'll continue to talk more in the second hour at redicemembers.com with Ramsey Paul. Please join us there and get full access to all our previous programs. We have vast archives with a lot of interesting stuff. All right, we have more coming, by the way, with Paul Craig Roberts, Israel Shamir, Frank Salter. We also have a Radio 314 coming up this Wednesday. Don't miss that one. And then we have Harry Cooper from Shark Hunters. We're going to talk about Hitler in Argentina and many more guests coming on after that. All right, we'll continue to talk more at redicemembers.com. We'll see you there. Thank you for listening.